Welcome to this special broadcast of A Celebration of Poetry, a collection of all the poems you heard on the air at KFSK through the month of April, National Poetry Month. These are poems read by kids and adults in Petersburg, poems they wrote themselves, or poems they wanted to share with you.
I'm Rose Lopez, and I'm going to be reciting Song of the Powers by David Mason. Mine, said the stone. Mine is the hour. I crush the scissors. Such is my power. Stronger than wishes, my power alone. Mine, said the paper. Mine are the words that smother the stone with imagined birds, dreams of them flown from the mind of the shaper. Mine, said the scissors. Mine all the knives, gashing through paper's earthreal lives, nothing so proper as tattering wishes. As stone crushes scissors, and paper snuffs stone, and scissors cut paper, they all end alone. So heap up your paper and scissor your wishes and uproot the stone from the top of the hill. They all end alone, as you will, you will.
This is Sally Reamer, and I would like to read to you one of the most amazing poems that I know of. It's called If by Rudyard Kipling. He wrote it for his son, but I think it will enliven all of us to hear it again. If you can keep your head when all about you are losing theirs and blaming it on you, if you can trust yourself when all men doubt you, but make allowance for their doubting too. If you can wait and not be tired by waiting, or being lied about, don't deal in lies, or being hated, don't give way to hating, and yet don't look too good nor talk too wise. If you can dream and not make dreams your master, if you can think and not make thoughts your aim. If you can meet with triumph and disaster and treat those two impostors just the same, if you can bear to hear the truth you've spoken, twisted by knaves to make a trap for fools, or watch the things you gave your life to broken and stoop to build them up with worn-out tools. If you can make one heap of all your winnings and risk it on one turn of pitch and toss and lose and start again at your beginnings and never breathe a word about your loss. If you can force your heart and nerve and sinew to serve your turn long after they are gone and so hold on when there is nothing in you except the will which says to them, hold on. If you can talk with crowds and keep your virtue, or walk with kings, nor lose the common touch, if neither foes nor loving friends can hurt you, if all men count with you, but none too much, if you can fill the unforgiving minute with 60 seconds worth of distance run. Yours is the earth and everything that's in it. And, which is more, you'll be a man, my son.
River Quitsland.
Aaron Murph.
Abel Albaugh.
Ian Fleming.
Poems from the Fellowship of the Ring by J.R.R. Tolkien. Upon the hearth, the fire is red. Beneath the roof, there is a bed. But not yet weary are our feet. Still round the corner, we may meet. A sudden tree or standing stone that none have seen but we alone.
Tree and flower and leaf and grass, let them pass, let them pass. Hill and water under sky, pass them by, pass them by.
Stir round the corner, there may wait a new road or a secret gate. And though we pass them by today, tomorrow we may come this way and take the hidden paths that run towards the moon or the sun.
Apple, thorn, and nut and slow, let them go, let them go. Sand and stone and pool and dell, fare you well, fare you well.
Home is behind, the world ahead, and there are many paths to tread. Through the shadows to the edge of night, until the stars are all alight.
Farewell we call to hearth and hall, the wind may blow and rain may fall. We must away ere break of day, far over wood and mountain tall.
The road goes ever on and on, down from the door where it began. Now far ahead the road has gone, and I must follow if I can.
Pursuing it with eager feet, until it joins some larger way, where many paths and errands meet, and whither then, I cannot say.
Do Not Go Gentle Into That Good Night, a classic by Dylan Thomas. Do not go gentle into that good night. Old age should burn and rave at close of day. Rage, rage against the dying of the light. Though wise men at their end know dark is right. Because their words had forked no lightning, they do not go gentle into that good night. Good men, the last wave by, crying how bright their frail deeds might have danced in a green bay. Rage, rage against the dying of the light. Wild men who caught and sang the sun in flight and learned too late, they grieved it on its way. Do not go gentle into that good night. Grave men near death who see with blinding sight, blind eyes could blaze like meteors and be gay. Rage, rage against the dying of the light. And you, my father, there on the sad height, curse, bless me now with your fierce tears, I pray. Do not go gentle into that good night. Rage, rage against the dying of the light.
My name is J. Stanton Greger. Years ago, I was in the Bob Marshall Wilderness in the month of March, and a good friend, Peter Brown, brought one poem out there with him. We read it by the campfire. It is The Men Who Don't Fit In by Robert Service. There's a race of men that don't fit in, a race that can't stay still. So they break the hearts of kith and kin, and they roam the world at will. They range the field, and they rove the flood, and they climb the mountain's crest. Theirs is the curse of the gypsy blood, and they don't know how to rest. If they just went straight, they might go far. They are strong and brave and true, but they're always tired of the things that are, and they want the strange and new. They say, could I find my proper groove, what a deep mark I would make. So they chop and change in each fresh move, is only a fresh mistake. And each forgets, as he strips and runs, with a brilliant, fitful pace, it's the steady, quiet, plodding ones who win in the lifelong race. And each forgets that his youth has fled, forgets that his prime is past, till he stands one day with the hope that's dead, in the glare of the truth at last. He has failed, he has failed, he has missed his chance, he's just done things by half. Life's been a jolly good joke on him, and now is the time to laugh. Ha ha! He is one of the legion lost. He was never meant to win. He's a rolling stone, and it's bread in the bone. He's a man who won't fit in.
This is a poem I wrote at the 2015 Fisher Poets Gathering in Astoria, Oregon. It was during a poetry contest where they give you one line, and then you have a couple hours to come up with a poem. And out of 50-some contestants, this one and one other one's ended up being tied for first. The line they gave us was, "You can't catch 'em all," and I kind of went a different direction with it. So here's my poem, "You Can't Catch 'em All." Alaska Bush People. Deadliest catch. BS that's 10 feet tall. There's so many reality shows about Alaska these days that you can't catch them all. Bristol Bay Fishing, The Axeman and Bigfoot Hunter, and some homestead show, I forgot the name. Alaska State Troopers and Ice Road Truckers. Has this crap become our claim to fame? Everybody wants to be on TV these days. Even Sarah Palin got the call. We look like idiots on every channel. Thank God you can't catch them all.
Hello again, this is Lee Ribbick. Title of this original poem is Spindrift. Lean overboard, study the water. Watch the tide within the tide. Circles spin in the current, strong enough to double back against the flow. Small whirlpools course laterally, not down. Drifting forward with the tide. Each spin gathers more drift. Stick of wood, leg of crab, tuft of grass, feather of gull. Passerby with no ill intent, just collecting passengers on a joyride to the tide change.
My Friendship Poem by Evelyn Anderson. Friendships, supportive, joyful, and caring, blossom with lovingness, warm-hearted as the sun, changes my personality. Blossom with lovingness, bursting with joyfulness, changes my personality, blooming with warm feelings, bursting with joyfulness. Happiness breaks out, blooming with warm feelings, butterflies soar inside me. Happiness breaks out, precious memories race through me, butterflies soar inside. Wings flutter rapidly. Precious memories race through me. Warm-hearted as the sun. wings flutter rapidly. Friendships, supportive, joyful, and caring.
I'm Chelsea Tremblay, and I'm reading The Moth, The Mountains, The Rivers by Mary Oliver. Who can guess the Luna's sadness who lives so briefly? Who can guess the impatience of stone longing to be ground down, to be part again of something livelier? Who can imagine in what heaviness the rivers remember their original clarity? Strange questions, yet I have spent worthwhile time with them. And I suggest them to you also, that your spirit grow in curiosity, that your life be richer than it is, that you bow to the earth as you feel how it actually is, that we, so clever and ambitious and selfish and unrestrained, are only one design of the moving, the vivacious many.
The inspiration for this poem comes from Daniel Quinn from his simple but iconic novel, Ishmael. It uses the metaphor of backyard, barn, and bike shop inventors to launch their flying machines. Usually crudely constructed contraptions assembled from canvas, wood, and bicycle parts. The most disastrous ones powered by gasoline motors. He uses metaphor to tell the story of the rise and fall of civilizations. This is my spin. It's titled Reality Check, rated R. The story tells of the launch of the most fabulous flying machine of all. The Empire Express was its name. 'Twas the end of history, they declared. This machine would not fall. Sustained flight, forever and ever, amen. Cast from the crest of the highest peak, our noble craft pierced the sky. Gaining speed swiftly as gaining ground, still, I'll believe they could fly. Funny how fallen feels like flying for a little while. Lighter payload might have dampened descent, but from faulty design, more than ill intent, the craft for sustained flight was never meant. And as wreckage below came into view, was a pretty good clue. They'd learned nothing from the crash of the wonderful craft that before this one flew, or the one before that one, too. The captain squawks out, everything's fine. He's got a plan. More power. Aye, aye, Cap'n. But cramped and strapped in the tight seats of steerage, peering through ports, we see flaps falling off, the wings are flailing, terra firma approaches fast, the airship is failing. Course can't be corrected, and we're pedaling as fast as we can. Up front, the fat cats, flying in first class, got nothing to lose. They're gambling men, sitting on their golden parachutes. Now they're handing out free drinks. I'll take two. Gotta wonder, what would Wilbur and Orville do? Reduce, recycle, reuse? Build some new craft from skin and bones of the old? Seems to me, if I may be so bold, we the passengers gotta get our tight asses free of restraints, think fast, think again, rethink, have another free drink, try something else, try anything. Abandon ship, that's my 42. It's catch 22. Are you crazy too? Reality check, checks in the mail. Or just don't look outside. Keep enjoying the ride. Don't see what you don't want to know. Have another drink. Bend over. Put head between knees. Kiss the guy behind you goodbye. Crash and burn, it's your turn. You're still gonna die. Suicide. rest in peace. You can be mad, you can be sad, hang out and pout, or figure things out, come up with a plan. What stage of grief are you in? You can protest, you can pray, write poetry, transcendental meditation. If it don't change the situation, it's still mental masturbation. Let go. Clinging is suffering. I'm tired of being afraid, tired of being ashamed, tired of hiding, tired of doing it alone. I may be dumb, but I ain't stupid. Better to live than survive. I want friends, not finance. Co-ops, not corporations, building my balloon. I'm flying with natural gas, don't you know? That's all some of us got. Plenty to go around. Brew your own. Gravity can't be defied or denied, but we can learn how to glide. Re-ride. Laugh out loud. I'll barter, I'll bargain, I'll sing. Hell, I'll dance. Call it romance. Crisis breeding creativity here in captivity. Evolution, hallelujah. Can it cure our common cold? I gotta guess, gotta gamble, gotta hope that we're gonna create a sustainable-ish society / state before it's too late. Visualize. Share it. Wear it. A parachute, hang glider, balloon. Build a bright red one. Just don't build another lead one. Bob the Builder can do it. In his garage, he's our man. Can't fix it all, but he'll fix what he can. Or die trying? What's the point? Looking for crew, could be you, to help the guy out or just keep him amused. Quitter or survivor, can't know till it's over, too soon. Sorry for the inconvenience, thinking out loud, author unknown.
Hello, this is Lee Ribbick with an original poem written just recently. It's called Hummingbird in January. Crocuses scout above ground. Daffodils up periscope. Dwelling for weeks in rain-drenched clouds. Themselves too warm to surrender snow. A hummingbird drinks from an unfrozen feeder in January. Numerous sightings confirm a ruby-breasted survivor in this extended autumn. A small traveler who didn't, instead found a place in the trees, in our yard, in our smiles, bringing hope of a different kind.
Dan Crane, and I've read here a time or two before. I'd like to read a couple of poems this afternoon by somebody other than me, namely John Haynes. I think he died a couple of years ago, but to my way of thinking, he probably was the best poet we've ever had in this state, and has been pretty generally recognized for brevity and depth. Recently in Fairbanks, they dedicated a state park on Chena Hot Springs Road. They dedicated a poem of his to, oh, it's at the trailhead on a stone. And he's that good. He just jumps out at you. And this is that poem, kind of describing his life. I'd recommend that you go to the library and dig out a little volume called Winter News. It was published in 1962. And this is the poem that was selected for that prize. It's called Poem of the Forgotten. I came to this place a young man, green and lonely. Well quit of the world, I framed a house of moss and timber, called it a home, and sat in the warm evenings, singing to myself as a man sings when he knows there is no one to hear. I made my bed under the shadow of leaves, and awoke in the first snow of autumn, filled with silence.
A History of Weather by Billy Collins. It is the kind of spring morning, candid sunlight elucidating the air, a flower-ruffling breeze that makes me want to begin A History of Weather, a 10-volume elegy for the atmospheres of the past, the envelopes that have moved around the moving globe. It will open by examining the cirrus clouds that are now sweeping over this house into the next state, and every chapter will step backwards in time to illustrate the rain that fell on battlefields and the winds that attended beheadings and coronations. The snow flurries of Victorian London will be surveyed along with the gales that blew off Renaissance caps. The tornadoes of the Middle Ages will be explicated in the long overcast days of the Dark Ages. There will be a section on the frozen nights of antiquity and on the heat that shimmered in the deserts of the Bible. The study will be hailed as ambitious and definitive, for it will cover even the climate before the flood, when showers moistened Eden, and will conclude with the mysteries of the weather before history, when unseen clouds drifted over an unpeopled world, when not a soul lay in any of the earth's meadows, gazing up at the passing of enormous faces and animal shapes, his jacket bunched into a pillow, an open book on his chest.
Beautiful Mom by Sean Spiegelmeyer. Beautiful Mom, always caring, cheerful as a singing songbird, playful and concentrated on work, bright as the burning sun, cheerful as a songbird, happy as a purring cat, bright as the burning sun, quick-witted as a fox, happy as a purring cat, grinning from ear to ear, quick-witted as a fox, brilliant, colossal, wonderful brain, grinning ear to ear, gayer than Dad fishing, brilliant, colossal, wonderful brain, adores books more than me, grinning ear to ear, playful but concentrated on work, adores books more than me, beautiful Mom, always caring.
Hi, this is Susan Erickson, and I'm going to be reading a poem called The Lanyard by Billy Collins, and I'd like to thank Mary Clemens, who introduced me to this poem. The Lanyard by Billy Collins. The other day, I was ricocheting slowly off the blue walls of this room, moving as if underwater from typewriter to piano, from bookshelf to an envelope lying on the floor, when I found myself in the L section of the dictionary, where my eyes fell upon the word lanyard. No cookie nibbled by a French novelist could send one into the past more suddenly, a past where I sat at a workbench at a camp in a deep Adirondack lake, learning how to braid long, thin, plastic strips into a lanyard, a gift from my mother. I'd never seen anyone use a lanyard or wear one, if that's what you did with them, but that did not keep me from crossing, strand over strand, again and again, until I had made a boxy red and white lanyard for my mother. She gave me life and milk from her breasts, and I gave her a lanyard. She nursed me in many a sick room, lifted spoons of medicine to my lips, laid cold face cloths on my forehead, and then led me out into the airy light, and taught me to walk and swim, and I in turn, presented her with a lanyard. "Here are thousands of meals," she said, "and here is clothing and a good education." "And here is your lanyard," I replied, which I made with a little help from a counselor. "Here is a breathing body and a beating heart, strong legs, bones and teeth, and two clear eyes to read the world," she whispered. "And here," I said, "is the lanyard I made at camp. And here I wish to say to her now is a smaller gift, not the worn truth that you can never repay your mother, but the ruthful admission that when she took the two-tone lanyard from my hand, I was as sure as a boy could be that this useless, worthless thing I wove out of boredom would be enough to make us even." The Lanyard by Billy Collins.
I'm Ian Fleming, and this is Be Glad Your Nose Is On Your Face by Jack Polinsky. Be glad your nose is on your face, not pasted in some other place, for if it were where it is not, you might dislike your nose a lot. Imagine if your precious nose were sandwiched in between your toes. That would clearly not be a treat, for you'd be forced to smell your feet. Your nose would be a source of dread were it attached atop your head. It would soon drive you to despair, forever tickled by your hair. Within your ear, your nose would be an absolute catastrophe. For when you were obliged to sneeze, your brain would rattle from the breeze. Your nose instead, through thick and thin, remains between your eyes and chin, not pasted on some other place. Be glad your nose is on your face.
This is Robin Hagerman, and this is from my mom, who really loved to hear me read aloud to my kids when she came to Petersburg to visit. The Tale of Custer the Dragon by Ogden Nash. Belinda lived in a little white house with a little black kitten and a little gray mouse and a little yellow dog and a little red wagon and a really-o, truly-o little pet dragon. Now, the name of the little black kitten was Ink, and the little gray mouse, she called her Blink, and the little yellow dog was sharp as mustard. But the dragon was a coward, and she called him Custard. Custard the dragon had big sharp teeth, and spikes on top of him, and scales underneath, mouth like a fireplace, chimney for a nose, and really-o, truly-o daggers on his toes. Belinda was as brave as a barrel full of bears, and Ink and Blink chased lions down the stairs. Mustard was as brave as a tiger in a rage, but Custard cried for a nice safe cage. Belinda tickled him. She tickled him unmerciful. Ink, Blink, and Mustard, they rudely called him Percival. They all sat laughing in the little red wagon at the really-o, truly-o cowardly dragon. Belinda giggled till she shook the house, and Blink said, "Weak!" which is giggling for a mouse. Ink and Mustard rudely asked his age, when Custard cried for a nice safe cage. Suddenly they heard a nasty sound, and Mustard growled, and they all looked around. "Mewch!" cried Ink. "Oh!" cried Belinda, for there was a pirate climbing in the window. Pistol in his left hand, pistol in his right, and he held in his teeth a cutlass bright. His beard was black, one leg was wood. It was clear that the pirate meant no good. Belinda paled, and she cried, "Help, help!" But Mustard fled with a terrified yelp. Ink trickled down to the bottom of the household, and Little Mouse Blink strategically mouse-holed. But up jumped Custard, snorting like an engine, clashed his tail like irons in a dungeon, with a clatter and a clank and a jangling squirm. He went at the pirate like a robin at a worm. The pirate gaped at Belinda's dragon and gulped some grog from his pocket flagon. He fired two bullets, but they didn't hit, and Custard gobbled him every bit. Belinda embraced him. Mustard licked him. No one mourned for his pirate victim. Ink and Blink and Glee did gyrate around the dragon that ate the pirate. But presently up spoke Little Dog Mustard. "I'd have been twice as brave if I hadn't been flustered." And up spoke Ink, and up spoke Blink.
"We'd have been three times as brave, we think."
And Custard said, "I quite agree that everybody is braver than me." Belinda still lives in her little white house, with her little black kitten, and her little gray mouse, and her little yellow dog, and a little red wagon, and her really-o, truly-o, little pet dragon. Belinda is as brave as a barrel full of bears, and Ink and Blink chase lions down the stairs. Mustard is as brave as a tiger in a rage, but Custard keeps crying for a nice safe cage.
Hi, my name's Joe Sebastian. I live in Kuprinoff, and I'm here today with a poem from Louise Bogan. She lived from 1897 to 1970, and this small poem's from a book called The Quotable Woman from 1979. Pretty remarkable book. I cannot believe that the inscrutable universe turns on an axis of suffering. Surely, the strange beauty of the world must somewhere rest on pure joy.
This is a poem written by Edgar Allan Poe's cat. I found this poem in a book entitled Poetry for Cats, which is a collection of verses written by the cats of famous poets. Remarkably, each cat's style of poetry is similar to each cat's particular poet. These poems were compiled by Henry Beard, who was a founder of National Lampoon. Now, everyone knows the story and the poem of The Raven by Edgar Allan Poe. Well, here is the cat's version of that incident. The End of The Raven by Edgar Allan Poe's Cat. On a night quite unenchanting, when the rain was downward slanting, I awakened to the ranting of the man I catch mice for. Tipsy and a bit unshaven, in a tone I found quite craven, Poe was talking to a raven perched above the chamber door. "Raven's very tasty," thought I, as I tiptoed o'er the floor. There was nothing I liked more. Soft upon the rug I treaded, calm and careful, as I headed toward his roost above that dreaded bust of palace I deplore. While the bard and birdie chattered, I made sure that nothing clattered, squeaked or snapped or fell or shattered as I crossed the corridor. For his house is crammed with trinkets, curios and weird decor, bric-a-brac and junk galore. Still, the raven never fluttered, standing stock still as he uttered in a voice that shrieked and sputtered his 2 cents worth, "Nevermore!" While this dirge the bird brain kept up, oh, so silently I crept up. Then I crouched and quickly leapt up, pouncing on that feathered boar. Soon he was a heap of plumage and a little blood and gore, only this and not much more. "Oh," my pickled poet cried out, "Pussycat, it's time I dried out. Never sat I in my hideout talking to a bird before. How I've wallowed in self-pity while my gallant, valiant kitty put an end to that awful ditty." Then I heard him start to snore. Back I caught the door, I clamored. "I, that statue I abhor," jumped and smashed it to the floor.
Hi, I'm Chelsea Tremblay, and I'm reading The Mockingbird by Mary Oliver. All summer, the mockingbird, in his pale gray coat and his white windowed wings, flies from the hedge to the top of the pine and begins to sing. But it's neither lilting nor lovely, for he is the thief of other sounds. Whistles and truck brakes and dry hinges, plus all the songs of other birds in his neighborhood. Mimicking and elaborating, he sings with humor and bravado, so I have to wait a long time for the softer voice of his own life to come through. He begins by giving up all his usual flutter and settling down on the pine's forelock, then looking around, as though to make sure he's alone. Then he slaps each wing against his breast, where his heart is, and, copying nothing, begins, easing into it, as though it was not half so easy as rollicking, as though his subject now was his true self, which, of course, was as dark and secret as anyone else's, and it was too hard, perhaps you understand, to speak or to sing it to anything or anyone but the sky.
Bunton. The encouragement and love you give to me, the way you always care, you're quiet, tactful, always brave, keeping me going all day long, the way you always care, annoying but sweet, you're awesome, keeping me going all day long, always athletic and also amazing, annoying but sweet, you're awesome, you love me and I love you back, always athletic and also amazing, a Seahawk king, football fanatic, you love me and I love you back. Miniature miracle in my mind, a Seahawk king, football fanatic. I will never stop loving you, Tanner. Miniature miracle in my mind, you're quiet, tactful, and always brave. I will never stop loving you, Tanner. The encouragement and love you give me.
Hi, my name's Joe Sebastian. I live in Kuprinoff, and I'm here today with a poem from Rudyard Kipling called My Boy Jack. This poem was written in 1915 to kind of honor his son who was killed in the Battle of Loos in France during World War I. And we kind of, this year and next several years, have centennial of World War I markings all the way through 2018. But this poem has a lot of background story to it, and I recommend you Google it. It comes right up if you're interested in more background on it. My Boy Jack by Rudyard Kipling. Have you news of my boy Jack? Not this tide. When do you think that he'll come back? Not with this wind blowing and this tide. Has anyone else heard word of him? Not this tide. For what is sunk will hardly swim. Not with this wind blowing and this tide. Oh dear, what comfort can I find? None this tide. Nor any tide, except he did not shame his kind, not even with that wind blowing and that tide. Then hold your head up all the more, this tide and every tide, because he was a son you bore and gave to that wind blowing and that tide.
This poem is titled Lesson of Bread by Jarrah Chadwick from the collection Story Hunger. Lesson of Bread. Our wool socks steaming by the tiny stove, we poise over tea, encountering the animal smell of ourselves in each other. The tea itself incidental, but necessary, cooling in our mugs. We sip and stare at our hands, our drying pant legs, the stove steeping in the room's sourdough air. How people used to meet, I think. Yes, keeping yeast starter alive in their clothes, breaking isolation like bread, a trail going only so far. This is my body, the least I would have you know.
I'm John Valentine, and I composed this poem originally for my sister. However, it can be used by any woman in Southeast Alaska as a reminder of their own self-worth. It's called The Huckleberry Child. The great land smiled and brought forth a child beneath the stars up north. It's taken near 10,000 years to bring this child forth. Those starry skies lit up her eyes, and sunshine gave his smile. Taku wind swirled and sculpted a girl, most dashing, brilliant, and wild. The eagles proclaimed her Thunderbird name, while ravens waited in line. Then warriors danced on and gave her their song, and hummingbirds put it to rhyme. The black-tailed deer came into the clear for time out from the rut. The does took care to color her hair. Those highlights took some bucks. Robins came near and crafted her ears, and blue jays filled in the racket. Salmon were fun. They taught her to run, and halibut gave her a jacket. The beaver was first to put her to work, and otters put her to play. Porcupine quills would give her some skills, and bees would chase her away. She learned to hug from grizzly bear cubs because they were both golden brown. And Big Mama Bear had taught her to scare whenever the wolves came around. So much was done in the midnight sun where northern lights unfold. The mountains placed the last embrace and made her heart from gold. She knew all along it's here she belongs, and from what she learned as a child, will now pass on her Thunderbird song of beauty that's magic and wild.
April by Marcia Masters. It's lemonade, it's lemonade, it's daisy. It's a roller skating, scissor grinding day. It's gingham waisted, chocolate favored lazy, with the children flowers scattered at their play. It's the sun like watermelon and the sidewalks overlaid with a glaze of yellow yellow like a jar of marmalade. It's the mower gently mowing and the stars like startled glass while the mower keeps on going through a waterfall of grass. Then the rich magenta evening like a sauce upon the walk, and the porches softly swinging with a hammock full of talk. It's the hobo at the corner with his lilac-sniffing gait, and the shy departing thunder of the fast departing skate. It's lemonade, it's lemonade, it's April, a water sprinkler puddle-winking time, when a boy who pedals slowly with a smile remote and holy sells you April chocolate flavored for a dime.
My name is Nicole Peterson, and I wrote this poem called Freedom. When you step outside, what do you see? The trees moving side to side, different birds soaring in the air, a full moon gleaming with stars on the side. What do you hear? The howling of wolves, a jet flying in the distance, crickets chirping in the dark. What do you smell? A fire you just put out, the dew on the plants, dandelions in your hands. What does the world mean to you now, now that you're living on your own, living on your terms? No one can tell you you're wrong. There's no social media judging you. No haters or rulebook changers. You have no need to hide. Identity of yourself can be revealed. You don't have to wear a jester's hat. No, not any longer. Trying to prove yourself worthy of the king of social media. It's over now, at least for you. Some poor souls still thrive on the gossip. their life still depends on the IV, pumping gossip which flows in the body, taking over the body's mind and soul. You can set your own path now, putting stepping stones in the path that you want, with your back against the non-believers, and inform them with the facts. Their life is being controlled by someone else. It is a lie. All the facts are not always backed up. It's like a one-sided newspaper company. They want it to sell, not to be completely factual. Running, running, faster, faster. Trying to escape all the events in your life, the memories, pain, and the mistakes, all due to trying to impress everyone, when the only one who mattered was you. When you finally got far enough away, you were able to breathe and think, for once in your life. You decided then and there that is what you wanted, and your remaining years of life, freedom.
A Gift by Greg Kowalski. Every day is a gift to be unwrapped, unveiling possibilities, capabilities, mysteries, hopes, dreams, and aspirations. Every day we have an opportunity to give, to love, and to learn. Because deep within us, every decision matters and holds a potential to make each day one to remember, within ourselves, but more importantly, in the lives of others, every day.
You just heard a KFSK special program, a celebration of poetry and a tribute to Mother's Day. CDs of this special program are available. Call the radio station during regular business hours and sign up for a copy. Thanks to all who contributed to the show, and thank you for listening. Have a good day.